There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. Midday Mobile on this Thursday, Little Friday, Friday Eve edition of the show. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk. Coming up in hour number two, speaking of what's coming up tomorrow, Sean Powers and Scott Bannon with Alabama Marine Resources and USA and the Dolphin Island Sea Lab are going to join us to talk about snapper season. Kicks off at 12:01 a.m. Hopefully you're not going to get out there in the dark and the rough on that. But that happens tomorrow. We'll talk more about that with them. Also, I'm pretty jazzed up here. Found out about this, I guess, about this time last week or Friday. And like I joked about with Jeff, I don't know. The style book would tell me that I would address him first as Secretary Ben Carson, but then he's a doctor. So he said, I'm going to lead with Secretary and then go, Dr. Ben Carson is going to join us at 1 o'clock to talk about his new book. It's actually on the New York Times bestseller list. We'll talk with him. Also, Ray Mellick from 1819 News joins us later this hour. And leadoff batter, my buddy, Robert Kennedy Jr. from Kennedy for Alabama. Good afternoon.
Hey, Sean, how you doing today, Matt?
I'm okay. And we got, you and I have got some heavy stuff to talk about here. I think the nation is mourning about that subject, and we will get into it in a second. I do want to talk a little bit about the political game
here.
And it's a discussion that's really been based around how Katie Britt did Tuesday night versus where the polls had her.
Okay.
And now you're wondering, why is Sean talking to Robert about Republican primary stuff, even though he's talks about it with us all the time. But this idea was maybe some portion of what was underpolled or overperformed came from Democrats crossing over to vote for Katie Britt in the Republican primary for Senate. Your thoughts on that as a Democrat?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is all of this happened in public, so I'm not pulling back the curtain on any super secret handshakes, but there were some fairly prominent folks within Democratic circles who were discussing openly whether or not Democrats should cross over and request a Republican ballot.
Right.
And the language that I like to use is the best of the worst. Right. So if.
Well, not right, but that's your take on it.
Again, I'm saying that tongue in cheek.
Yes.
Right. So if history is a guide, and the chances are, the limit as X approaches infinity that a Republican is going to be elected into that chair, is there an argument that says we want to have an imprint on that conversation in order to cross over? And you can actually see it in the numbers. So I'm going to spitball this. A little bit over 800,000 total votes were cast.
Mm-hmm. 850,000 something, yeah.
80% of the votes were for Republican ballots, 20% for Democratic ballots.
Mm-hmm.
We know that obviously there's going to be more interest on the Republican side during the primary than it is on the Democratic side, but that's a huge over-index.
Mm-hmm.
And so that suggests maybe, 5 percentage points or so of those votes.
What you're saying is by looking at the small number there that requested Democrat ballots, you got to think more Democrats than that showed up to their polling place on Tuesday. Therefore, that leads you to believe they were asking for a Republican ballot.
And this is a very different strategy. And like I mentioned, the people who are advocating this were individuals who have a certain amount of cachet and credibility within Democratic circles. It wasn't quacks. But the strategy was different than during the 2017 senatorial election. So there, some of the crossover was designed to push Roy Moore over the top with the thought that he was vulnerable enough.
Yeah, Doug Jones could have an easier time to beat
in the general election, right?
Yeah.
Whereas this time, again, just looking at the backgrounds of the individuals involved, how it is they developed their career, there is a sincere belief among some in Democratic circles that of the Republican candidates, Katie Britt was simply the best of those candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a much more sincere vote than what happened in 2017.
As you look at that kind of strategy voting, is it because it makes sense to me if I was on the other side of this coin, I would get that. But some people might say, yes, but then you, I guess people that really adhere to having a D or an R behind their name would say, well, you violated, you know, you've now voted for the other side.
No, not at all in this case, because, and we are fortunate and blessed enough to be able to interview all three of the Senate candidates on the Kennedy for Alabama here on FM Talk 106.5.
That's right.
And I actually know Dr. Will Boyd. I know him well, know him personally for years. And it was—
He crushed it, too.
It was fairly clear, at least among the folks who knew of the candidates, that he was going to be the one that came on out on top. The only question was whether or not he was going to do it without a runoff.
Right.
And so I believe, and you and I have talked about this philosophically, about the distinction between the Alabama Democrat and the National Democrat. So while we have a significant portion of folks who would be considered on the left progressive wing of the party, the vast majority of folks are in the moderate to conservative wing of the party. And that is where Dr. Will Boyd fills kind of that void.
Yes.
And so that's the reason why I think people felt comfortable crossing the lines, because we still ended up with a strong nominee on the Democratic side.
That's a whole other discussion for another day, too. And we've had it before, but I heard Parker Griffith on earlier this week talking mm-hmm. about the need. You know, Parker, who's now a Democrat, has been a Republican, has been now a Democrat,
mm-hmm.
but is behind the Katie Britt campaign, not officially, but like you said, crossing over, talking about
the he almost tanked the whole thing when he said he was supporting her. It's like if he was supporting her, he needed to keep his mouth shut.
Yes. About a bunch of things.
Exactly.
But he also said this, that he doesn't think there's any increasing chances for Democrats in the state of Alabama until there's some kind of, and I don't know how you do this officially, but some kind of distinction made, some kind of break made with the National Democrat Party between Alabama Democrats.
I don't think it has to be a break, but I think folks need to be more willing to kind of plant a flag on their position and simply own it. You and I had a conversation offline when we were talking about a segment that was done by Meet the Press Daily. Mm-hmm. And they talked about how the Democratic Party lost the rural voter.
Yeah.
So really what's ended up happening is there's been much more of an urban focus. And with us being such a rural state, we have a responsibility locally to meet voters where they are. And I think you can do that without breaking with the National Party, but still distinguishing the areas where we may be different.
Would it be easier for Democrats in Alabama to win or get support if they weren't linked through that to Nancy Pelosi? Let me pick one. Pick a brand here that's...
No, and the reason why, and
this
I actually...
California
no,
Democrat.
No, I joked with you guys about this before. In 2018, when I was the Democratic nominee, there were more mentions on this show of AOC, who is a Democratic mm-hmm. nominee in New York City,
right.
than any media exposure that I had for my campaign or anything that I was doing. So there won't be a way to make that break. It's just simply not possible, because at the end of the day, my friends in conservative talk radio circles are going to find whoever they believe the biggest demon is, and that's who they're going to refer to.
All right. We'll talk about this, too. The overall anemic turnout. I've been saying that Alabama has a low T problem. Low T.
Yeah.
That is turnout. Is that, as we look at this, what about that, from a Democrat perspective, not feeling that you're, you know, I mean, you're talking about people went out and voted in 20,000, but if you don't feel engaged
mm-hmm.
in having a chance to win, is that there a reason that Democrats don't turn? I mean, why would Democrats not turn out?
Sure, there are two reasons.
Because Republicans screwed it up, too, with turnout. It was very low, but I mean, Democrats are very
low. And this goes back to something that we talked about before. If you recall, in the immediate aftermath of the 2018 election, for over a year, I would not talk to you about anything happening with the party,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I wanted that time and distance.
Yes.
And the only person who was responsible for my loss ultimately was me as the candidate. Having said that, there are things that the party can do from a structure and logistics standpoint to better support the candidates, and that simply has not happened. So and if you look at people coming off of the 2018 cycle where everybody was excited and there were positions filled up and down the ballot, then subsequent to that, there was this infighting in the party.
We saw
and
it,
so
yeah.
Everybody saw it. It was in plain sight. But there's still some legacies of that all needs to get hugged out, trade out, whatever the case may be. Because at the end of the day, part of the reason why our friends on the GOP side continue to win is because the GOP is better organized and more strategic. And so until that happens, you're not going to get the faith in the community to be able to generate the turnout that is closer to where we are as a state right now, which is more of a 60-40 split as opposed to an 80-20 split.
I mean, it is a little bit chicken and an egg, isn't it? Because, I mean, you have to – if you're somebody that was thinking about, you know, exposing yourself to running for office with everything that entails, you kind of want to think folks are going to show up to vote. But folks only want to show up to vote when they think there's a candidate – that's going to, you know, have some chance of doing something.
I had a fairly prominent Republican who is actually running for office right now. I will not say his name out of courtesy for the conversation we were having. He asked the question, was why didn't Doug Jones run again? Right. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about the record that Doug Jones had, and the part that I'm focusing on are the bills that he put forth that were co-led by Republicans and that were signed by President Trump, is he never effectively anchored to that message. So it ended up being the stuff that you talked about. It ended up being Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and all this other stuff that did not set up for him to make another run, at least this quick. And he had all the resources in the world.
Yeah.
So if you think of every other candidate not having that and not having the complete support and backing of the party, yes, anything that's happening with the Democratic Party in the state of Alabama is going to be a long-term, multi-cycle build.
All right. We'll continue that conversation about it. Now I want to you mentioned prayer and you mentioned, we'd start off this conversation, both of our hearts heavy because we were talking about this before we came out of the news. We're talking off air. And the first thing I want to point out is what is now, you know, this political football is the murder of children. OK. And I mean, people say it's a school shooting. It's a murder of children and adults with those teachers as well. But it's children got murdered in Uvalde, Texas. Is that a correct? Children were murdered.
I don't think we're going to be debating that particular point.
So I to me, out of decorum, and you and I both with like kind of similar home training, there needs to be a portion of time. Even though every time, I know I'm not naive, I know it goes into political debate, there needs to be a portion of time where that's what's important.
You know, it's interesting. I had a conversation that I'll talk about here in a second, but the first shout out that I want to give is to the Border Control agents. And it's the reporting right now suggests they were the SWAT Border Control agents were the ones who ultimately went into the building and killed the individual who was killing other individuals. So I just want to make sure that I give them a shout out.
Absolutely.
I think this notion of time and a period of mourning is absolutely appropriate. The only thing is that it has to be time bound because, you know, we our sense of attention span is so short, right? The very first fundamental purpose of government is to keep its citizenry safe. And ultimately, we need to figure out how to do that better tomorrow than we are today.
And how? Okay, so let's talk about how we do that, because on the political side of it,
sure,
you run the corners, and I'm obviously, you know, and you and I are not far off in our Second Amendment philosophies. But I hear the President Biden speaking, and he gets in, and he's like 4.5 minutes in, and it starts with, you know, a Second Amendment, a gun control discussion. So that makes me feel like I'm back in my corner and I'm going to punch out. And then I'm, by the stuff I've received in emails, calling me a gun nut, and I have no heart for children and all that stuff.
Right.
Then maybe my mention of defending Second Amendment has pushed them into that corner. That's not productive. Are there things we can do instead of it having to be all or nothing, you know, this full attack on whatever part of gun policy you want to make it, or this complete saying that that's the only thing? Can't fair-minded Americans say, all right, let's talk about securing schools. Let's talk about making sure those doors are locked. Let's talk about arming school resource officers, something that's kind of the changing in the discussion here, the Mobile County Public School System. Aren't those things that we can get majority to? Because if you wait for what everybody says is the top of Olympus, it doesn't happen. Why don't we get some things done that we can agree on?
You know, it's interesting, and I told you I was going to make a reference to a conversation I had. So I had a conversation with an individual in the state of Texas who had some experience training schools to respond to these type of casualties. Mm-hmm. And what he was saying was he was heartbroken because they've spent years doing the training, and then at that particular moment when the training was required, it still wasn't effective. That's not to say there's a problem with the training, but you know what I'm saying? People ended up losing their lives after all this time, effort, and resources was put into it. And so really, I think it comes down to the two things that you mentioned that are practical. And I'm not going to get into the specific line by line, but there has to be something on the school side, right? Mm-hmm. Which says, can we make the schools a little bit more secure tomorrow than they are today without making kids feel like they're in a prison?
Right.
And then conversely, the other thing that you and I were talking about online, and I'll say it, and people can be mad at me and call and yell at me on the show tonight if they want to do that, is that this problem primarily starts with 18 to 22-year-old males, mm-hmm. right? You don't hear a whole lot about young ladies going in and shooting up schools.
This is truth right here. Yeah.
And so I am about as close to a Second Amendment purist as you're going to find, with the obvious exception of bump stocks, which we talked about before.
With the exception of me, right? Yes.
But I think there is a rational conversation we can have that says if you need to be 21-year-old to buy a handgun, that you may need to be 21 years old in order to buy a long gun.
Right.
I think we can have that conversation and have it in a way that is very rational without saying that we want to go into everybody's house and take guns away.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that is. And it is because that age group going through the early adult transition, some of it's societal, some of it's biological, that people engage in risky behavior. And when you start to mix hate, fear, and anger and access,
mental illness.
I'm not on the mental illness tip. I mean, there's no lot.
What makes you go shoot some eight-year-old children?
There's no traditional link in the literature that says a person who suffers from mental illness is violent.
No, I'm not saying it's the inverse, but it's the obverse.
I'm not even trying to go down that road. But I'm just saying it's the age group engaged in risky behavior with access to something that allows them to do a huge amount of damage. If you could put in a barrier that limits the access to that age group and you give a person an opportunity to mature a little bit more, maybe that's something that ends up impacting at least the last two situations. Not everyone, but at least the last two.
All right, coming back, more of this conversation. Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama Tonight. He'll set up that discussion when we return.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
And I know we've got phone calls stacked up here, but we are short on time. You can call tonight at 6. Kennedy for Alabama right here on FM Talk 106.5. I put the right mic up. I figure I'd learn this board after 14, 15 years.
Yeah, you think it's been a minute, right?
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah, very excited about Kennedy for Alabama tonight. We're going to lead off with Mr. Dale Leach, who is one of our local reporters with Lanyap.
He just won an award, by the way?
I did not.
Yeah, so I just saw that on Facebook. Okay. So, Dale, if you're listening, congratulations.
I will have to congratulate him on that. But, yeah, we're going to do the same thing you and I started off the program doing, just a little debrief of what happened during the election season. And then we're going to have Mr. Dexter Strong, who is the political director for the Alabama Democratic Party. He's going to join us for a few minutes to tell us a little bit about what the party is doing during the runoff season and in preparation for the general election. I'll be sure to bring up some of the topics that we talked about there as well. And then at the end of the show, we're going to have a call in from Dr. J.T. Averhart, who was actually the 2020 Democratic nominee for United States Congress and is currently the national president of the Montfort-Port Marines. And we're going to talk about the true purpose of Memorial Day.
Excellent. Now, that's fantastic. And you know, having Marines and sailors get along is a good thing.
Yeah, every time they go somewhere to fight, we give them a ride.
That's right. So. Good. Well, you didn't want to start trouble, but you know, Dr. Averhart and I talked about that. We gave you grief. You weren't there, but we were giving you grief.
Yes.
We got about 30 seconds here, but I mean, some of these texts here. Tyler says, 25 years old to buy a semi-auto stops this attack. Can you agree with this idea?
Yeah, we ultimately, Sean, what we talked about is we have to determine what's 18, what's 21, and what's 25. You can't rent a car till 25. You can't drink till 21, right? And so it's somewhere in that space. But I do believe that ends up decreasing the risk because we know most of this risk has a tendency to skew younger.
This texture says, and I've said this too, texture, one bullet from that resource officer could have saved all those babies' lives. Just one. Disarm and eliminate the threat before it even walked in the door.
Body armor.
Yeah.
Body armor's the issue.
Yeah, but by the way, too, I don't have time, but the president's understanding how body armor and the power of certain rounds versus others is skewed. Somebody needs to get with him. Robert, as always, good to see you.
Sean, good to see you. You guys be good and stay dry, okay?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Get to a conversation with Ray Melick, our friend, editor-in-chief at 1819news.com in just a second. I do want to take, Gary's been holding, and I want to get to his call. Gary's in Gulf Shores. Ready for, you ready for all the rest of us to show up down there for the weekend? Is that what you're preparing for? Did we lose Gary? There he is. Gary, you there? I don't know what's happened. I think all the things are put, well, we lost Gary. That's okay. I thought it was going to be a perfect transition, a segue, a pivot into a conversation I want to have with our friend from 1819news.com, Ray Melick. So I'm going to have to do it without Gary's call here. He was going to talk about the turnout issue and the low turnout issue, and I figured you and I could talk about Alabama's low T problem.
That's good, Sean. I may steal that. That's pretty good.
Yeah, we got a low T problem. That's I was putting that out. Since Tuesday that we got a low T problem out there in the state. What can we do to turn this around? Yeah, this is a conversation you and I have had. You pointed out in your latest op-ed that if people don't care about, they're just handing. Okay, here's a stat and react to this. That doing some math the other day, that if you look at the total number of votes cast, right? If you look at total number of votes cast on Tuesday, you look for the number of votes cast for Governor Ivey, who legitimately, it's all day long, legitimate 54% in the vote. But that does only account for 10%. The vote she got out of the total number of registered Alabama voters was only 10% of registered Alabama voters that voted for Governor Ivey, the person who is the chief executive for another 4 years.
Right.
10%. That's it. 10%.
Yeah. I mean, so essentially, I voted. So I voted for 10 other people or 9 other people. My vote carried the weight of 9 people who I don't even know who they are, probably. And they allowed me to make that decision over who the chief executive officer of the state is for them. I appreciate it, but I'm appalled by it.
It should. I mean, I think it's worth not just saying that we have low T problems here for turnout, but pointing things out, like, I don't know, what do you call them, factoids or something like that. But that one got my attention. I mean, if you think about the person that has the highest ranking job in state government, and only 10% of the registered voters in the state voted for that person, it's something. Now, we can go down the line and say that, like you've talked about, that, when we have turnout like this, you're voting for the other 3 people in line with you at the checkout line at Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah, that was kind of the point of my column, and I actually toned it down a little bit because I took it a little too far in the original version. But it's true. I mean, now, I will also say this. In some ways, maybe it's because we just didn't have a candidate that really captured people's imagination or really fired them up. With all apologies to Tim James and Lindy Blanchard and Lou Burdett and Dean Odell, all fine people that I met and I liked, but none of them apparently rose to the level that people really want to stand up and do something different with it. And you just wonder if everybody looked at it and went, it's just going to be more of the same, so let's just stick with what we have, or I don't care, or I don't, Sean, I don't know. But regardless, I think it's a shame that only 1 out of 10 people that are registered to vote, or as I said, if 23% of registered voters turnout, then that means basically 1 out of 5. So 4 other people allowed me, and I assume allowed you, to vote for them and make these major decisions on their behalf.
Now, the part of this will be, okay, Number one, we could talk about the lack of Democrat turnout. And I just had my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. on with me in the first half, and he a Democrat, and we were talking about that. We talked a little bit about crossover, but you know, if the Democrats feel like they don't have anybody to go vote for, do Democrats show up? So does that already put that number down there? But even if you pull the Democrats out of there, Republicans, I'm putting it in some vernacular here, kids are in school, y'all sucked for turnout. Yeah I mean, it's what it is.
Yeah. And it, you know, and I want to back up to your previous point, because I do think it says something that Democrats in this state are also at a point where they almost feel like, well, I got to go vote for a Republican that might represent me, because the Democratic candidates we have don't have a chance. Therefore, I'm going to have to cross over. You know, it may be, you know, and you could take the Mo Brooks approach, which is, oh, they're coming in and trying to screw up the Republican primary and elect the person that's the, you know, the weakest. Or you could argue, no, they know their candidate doesn't have a chance, so they're trying to vote for the candidate they think might represent them the best. And that's, again, that's part of a reflection on the state of the Democratic Party here in Alabama. And just a general apathy, though. I mean, your bigger point is right. There's just such an apathetic attitude about voting, about politicians, of sort of a nothing we can do about it. We just have to put up with it kind of a deal. And that's a shame.
No, that is a shame. And that is a rot from the inside for our republic, for all parties.
Yeah.
It is. There's always going to be some apathy. Believe me, I was young once. I get it. But I mean, if that apathy continues and people, and that's why I'm bothered. Even people that are saying, hey, you know, the election was stolen from former President Trump and I don't trust this or that or the other, so I'm never voting again. I think I hear that, and not only am I bothered by it in the short term, in the acute term, but chronically, that's what undoes a free country like ours when people have given up engaging in that system.
Yeah. So there, and really what happens is you have a ruling class,
yep.
You know, and that isn't always the elite or the moneyed people. It's just that the people who are the most engaged, for example, and this isn't, I don't mean this in a bad way, so I got to be careful here. But the representative from up here in Alabama that died, David, and I forgot his last name, and I hate that. But anyway, so the Republican Party put together a committee, and they selected a candidate, and that candidate will be on the ballot in November because there was nobody running against this gentleman. But, you know, okay, well, that's the way that's done. But pretty soon we're going to be where that's the way it's always going to be done. Is,
yep.
Is just some party officials are going to pick candidates, and nobody's going to vote. So whoever they pick gets to have the power. And now we've really gotten away from the whole representative government idea. I really am, you know, one thing that I've always, my whole life, my first election, and, you know, a lot of us back in the 70s when I turned 18, old enough to vote, I voted for Jimmy Carter. I mean, I lived in Georgia. He was the governor of Georgia. So, you know, you can say what you want about that. But I've always taken voting very seriously. And I don't know how we've lost that sense among people to feel like their vote matters and it counts. Listen, in North Alabama, there's a couple of small races and district confusion, but it's less than 80 people are making the, you know, are the deciding factor. And and again, with that low of a turnout, that could have been completely different if people just took it serious and said, I'm going to find out who my local state representative is supposed to be and have a say in that.
Now, right, let me add this to the mix before I even go look at my text line. I'll just take it from the people who text this. Why are you and I will paraphrase what I see in a lot of texts, but I think it's worth discussing. Why would you encourage these people to vote when they're not, you know, they're low information voters, right? They're not people that are engaged in this. So why do we want them voting anyway?
You're putting that question out there to me. Is that,
yeah. Yeah. Because they put it out to me. So I'm going to just pass it on down.
Because, you know, we believe we're a democracy, we're a republic democracy, and people have a say. And even if they vote and vote stupidly, they've made their choice. And that's the bedrock of what our government is built on. And I do believe that over time, people will realize what's going on and make the right choice. But I would much rather have the low information voter at least out there participating in the system than have an elite a handful of people making the decisions for us. And that's how you turn into an oligarchy or whatever words you want to use that eventually leads to, it's some form of a dictatorship.
Yep, and it's that people lacking faith and engagement in the system, for sure. That conversation, one of the many going on 1819news.com. Tell folks about the website, what you're doing over there, and why should they type those letters and numbers into their Google search?
Yeah, 1819news.com. We started about 7-8 months ago now. Want to just provide an alternative daily source of news, not just political news, but news that covers the entire state. And also a more right-leaning conservative editorial voice, which I think was lacking. And then we're also doing podcasts, and we're doing investigative reporting. So we're doing sort of what I call old-fashioned journalism in the modern age online, 1819news.com. You can subscribe, get it in your inbox every morning about 7:30, or you can always, again, free, go to 1819news.com and see everything we're doing and give us a chance. See if we don't become one of your primary sources of news for all things in the state of Alabama.
All right. I'm looking forward to that headline with Alabama has a low T issue in it. So
it's good. Good, John.
Thanks.
You get a residual on that.
Good.
I don't know how we'll figure it out, but we'll do it.
All right. We'll work it out. We'll have my people call your people or something like that if
okay,
I had people.
Good, yeah.
All right. Good deal. Thank you, man.
And lose my number.
Okay. It's happened right now. All right. Coming right back. That's Ray, and this is Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right at 12:50, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. Take some calls here at 251-343-0106. This segment of the show brought to you by Blue Water Yacht Sales. Right now, if you're considering selling your boat, let me tell you. So Forrest, my buddy Forrest Long with Blue Water Yacht Sales, they've been doing this 50 years in Mobile. And when he and I sat down to talk about getting the word out on this, I asked the regular question. I've sold a lot of boats. I've had very few vehicles and but been buying and flipping boats, if you can call it. Not flipping, not in a bad way, but like reselling them since I was, a teenager. I said to him, why do I come to you to use a brokerage service? Why would I do that when I can sell it myself? He said, okay. He said, first of all, I'm going to get you just as much money for the boat as if you sold it yourself. That got my attention. Then he pointed out all the stuff that I remember over the years, taking people out on test drives, meeting them at having to run home from work and go test drive a boat and then try to get back in, or they're wanting to come, Sunday night at 9 o'clock to look at, all those pains, all the calls, all that stuff. It's better to let somebody else deal with it. And somebody who has a network around the country of people looking for the boat you're getting ready to sell. Blue Water Yacht Sales has this brokerage network. They market your boat all over the country. That's how they get top dollar. That's how they get you just as much as you would selling it on your own. You'll get as much money for it as you would selling it yourself. And for minimum cost as well, they make sure it's in top shape and ready to sell, looks its best. So make that call today. Get a high-end used boat you're ready to sell. Do it. 476-2699. That's the phone number, or check them out online, bluewateryachtsales.net, 476-2699, or bluewateryachtsales.net. Check them out today. All right, to the phones, and first up, see here, Gary's back. Good. Oh, hey, Gary. Sorry about earlier. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I could hear you, but you know how the cell phone.
I do. So you want to talk voter turnout?
Yeah. I have a theory, and you may shoot a hole in it. It's very disappointing to me to see the low turnout like a lot of other people. But I got a theory, and that is, if you look at our voter turnout since World War II, it's been a downward trend, with the exception of a few elections that were highly visible, highly contentious, or there was some issues that resonated across all the demographics. But generally speaking, I think our national patriotism and pride has kind of been on a downward trend because we don't have any generations left, hardly, that ever felt like our country's security was legitimately threatened.
Yeah.
We had 9/11, and there was a little bump up in voter turnout right after 9/11. But overall, I think until our country is legitimately threatened again, and history says it will be one day, then I think we're going to continue to see more apathy and people that are not going to be engaged and as interested as they would otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd shoot a hole in it. I think there's a lot to what you're saying, Gary. Something to think about there. We could pull out some numbers in different states that vote more regularly at a higher turnout than we do. I had some of those numbers the other day. We can dig back into it. But what you say is something worth pondering for sure. I appreciate your call. Let's go to Maximus in Mobile up next. Wants to talk about the shooting. Hey, Maximus.
Hey, Sean, how you doing? Love the show.
Thank you. The shooting, what I call, if you're talking about the same one, the murdering of children in Uvalde, Texas, is that the one?
Yeah, it's concerning because, what I do is I teach active shooter training, at a large southwestern Alabama police department. And the main emphasis that we put on the training, if nothing else, is stop the killing. If there's shots fired, stop the killing. And if it's true that those officers waited more than 40 minutes to make entry with shots being fired, that's absolutely ridiculous and tragic in and of itself.
So the policy, and I can't imagine it's going to be, if you teach active shooter training anywhere, I'm sure there's some, it's probably mostly the same anywhere you go, is to stop the killing, right? I mean, that's the number one, that's the number one rule of engagement.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you get, we teach go in by yourself. If you're the only person there, you hear shots being fired in a school or a business or anything like that, you make entry and you go. You don't wait for SWAT because that hails back to the history of SWAT or officers waited outside of Columbine for upwards of a few hours, I want to say 4 hours, while the killing was going on. And from that came our training, which we teach a nationwide program that's taught to police officers and Mobile, Uvalde, Texas, and Anchorage, Alaska. It's the same program so that we have uniformity in training. And it states, stop the killing first and foremost.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, the premise being that if the bad guys are shooting at us, he's not shooting at kids. He's not killing kids. He's trying to kill us, which is what we're there for. It's like that piece of trash in Parkland, Texas, who was armed and didn't go into the school and handle business.
And we're talking about Parkland, Florida shooting, because that's what I was about to ask you. We have these stories because I as a civilian, I often tiptoe around things because I have not been put in that position. But I want to believe, and enough folks that I know in these positions and in law enforcement that do this job, they know exactly what they're doing with this job. And that's why I hold in such high regard folks that do that, because you are going to put your life on the line for those children. You are going to engage. I mean, that's why you're there. Am I stretching that, Maximus?
Not at all, man. That's why we do what we do. I mean, if anybody has any doubt about whether they're going to be able to hit that door, charge their rifle, hit that door and do God's work, as we call it, then, we tell them in training, if you don't think that you can go into this school past these little kids who've been injured or killed and take out the perpetrator, you don't need to be here, period.
So as we get in this discussion, and I was happy to hear that there may be some movement in Mobile County public school systems to allow armed SROs like Baldwin County has and other schools have. We got to make sure that we have the right ones. I don't know how you make sure of that, but maybe there's some level that they have to reach or whatever to be that person. Because, if... Like you said something I think is real interesting. If you heard what Maximus just said, not just that you're going in there to render dirtbags room temperature, but if they're shooting at you and y'all are in a shootout with them, they're not shooting children. That's a big takeaway there. Even if you haven't killed them, it's a shootout, but they're not shooting children when they're trying to make sure that you don't shoot them.
Exactly. And then the whole resource officer thing, just me speaking personally, most of those guys I know in Mobile or retired police officers anyways. So you take them out there, put them out on the range, certify them with their weapons, and they should be good to go.
It seems like, everybody goes to political corners on this every time this happens. We watch this happen, and we don't find what things I think people can agree on and institute that. And I hope, although I will say this, I saw this change from yesterday's Mobile County Public School Board meeting that gives me some faith that maybe some hearts are changing here and we can move forward with this. But great takeaway. I know that folks I talk to in law enforcement tell me that they're ready to do this and sign on. We just have to have a place for them.
Yeah. I mean, Absolutely. It needs to happen. It's past time that, you know, I saw something on some news network that said we can send $40 billion to Ukraine, but we can't fortify our own schools against an internal threat.
That I agree 100% with that sentiment. I agree with it. Maximus, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Appreciate what you do.
Have a good one.
All right. There he is. So that's in that story, by the way, if you want to check it out, that I was talking about, it is from our news partners at WKRG, and it's the Mobile County Public School System. Member asked superintendent to look into arming school resource officers. And I think this is telling, too, because I've been here before. I feel like, you know, a little bit of a Groundhog Day with this. We've had this discussion in the past, and one of the voices that was against arming school resource officers was school board member Dr. Reginald Crenshaw. He is, as of yesterday's meeting, said his mind is being changed. He wants to look into arming school resource officers for Mobile County Public Schools. Godspeed, Dr. Crenshaw. Godspeed. Do whatever we can to support that on our end here at Midday Mobile, for sure. Yeah, you can check that story out through the front page of our website, or just check it out from WKRG.com. All right, coming back, Secretary Dr. Ben Carson. I think we're trying to figure out which one to call him. I'll figure it out here during the break. Ben Carson joins us to talk about his new book, which is on the New York Times bestsellers list, and we'll talk to him about it next right here on Midday Mobile.